Hello, you're about to listen to an episode of the podcast called The Movie Mixtape with Marty and Dirk. This is episode 29 and it is the start of a new mixtape, one that we're calling How Have You Not Seen That? This is my pick for Marty. It is 1996's Mission Impossible, directed by Brian De Palma, starring, Tom Cruise, along with John Voight and Emmanuel Beart. So if you're interested in that, why don't you sit back, relax, and enjoy the mix. Hello, Marcy. Dun, 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 dun. How are you doing?
Hello. Confession time. I think I didn't realize that score was tied to this movie, but Do-do-do. I just had to say that because you started. I'm okay. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm just shocked for a second there. You didn't know that was the Mission Impossible theme, or you didn't know that was the theme in the film?
I had heard the theme, but because I'd never seen the movies, I think maybe like a part of me knew it was from Mission Impossible, but did not get confirmation until finally watching this first movie.
Oh, well, I've got some questions around that. Let me tell you what I'll ask you later, but Okay. Welcome everyone to the start of a new mixtape, which we have christened How Have You Not Seen This? And for people who are new to this podcast, hello, sit down, you'll be more comfortable. It's a podcast with me and Marcy, and we have a theme, which we call a mixtape, for every sort of four episodes, and I'll pick a movie for Marcy to watch that she usually hasn't seen before, and she'll pick one for me that I usually haven't seen before, and then we'll pick one together. But these are all films we really loved and that we want to share with each other. And then the final pick will be a friend's pick, and they'll come on, and it's a film they really love, related to the mixtape theme, and we all watch that and talk about it together. But what's this mixtape about then, Marcy? Why is this one different?
So this one's all about shame and shaming each other into asking, why have you not seen this movie? And I mean, it's a good question, especially, so, you know, you picked Mission Impossible this week, and I think like everyone under the sun by now has seen at least one of these movies, and I just have never seen any of them until now. So we'll get a little bit more into that.
But I think one of the things when you're doing a podcast with Marcy Dale, who is the queen of Hollywood, that is her official title if she got her driver's license out. She has seen like flipping 95% of the films in the history of cinema, and so it's hard work sometimes trying to pick a film that she hasn't seen. So when you find out that she hasn't even seen Mission Impossible, then that is one bone of contention that you can really, you know what? Shame you for. You said it, not me, kid.
I think shame is like the, you know, like in Game of Thrones, shame. You're just ringing your little bell behind me, shame, shame. But it definitely, I think, this is a movie where it's like, I mean, I know why I haven't seen it, but like when I mentioned that to people, like I was on Cinenauts a couple weeks ago and I told them, I was like, yeah, this is what Dirk's going to pick. And they were like, the Catcher and Ian both were like, what? And I was like, I don't know. Well, we'll get there when we get there. I will finally watch it though this year. So I don't know. There's just some big movies, especially like what this whole franchise has turned into. I mean, I have my reasonings. We'll get into it later, but...
You've preempted me a little bit there, though, Marcy, because I wanted to say, you were on Cinenauts, weren't you, a couple of weeks ago? Mm-hmm. For those people paying attention, Marcy is almost at a full house for tape deck bingo. That is Film Hags, 70mm, and... Is it? No, Film Hags, 70mm, and Cinenauts. Is there any other ones you've done from tape deck?
No, but that was all this year, though. Yeah. It's been a fun year.
You've been making the rounds, making the deals,
you know what else?
Signing the checks.
They were all brand new movies too, because we did the newest Batman on Film Hags, mm-hmm. then we did the newest Jurassic World on 70mm, and then on Cinenauts we just did Prey, which is the prequel for Predator, which just, it literally had just come out, and then they asked me to be on for it, which that movie, please watch it if you haven't. It's a very good movie. Probably one of my favorite movies from this summer, honestly.
Well, I had a listen, and it was a real good episode. And a good film. Yeah, I really enjoyed the film as well. But it's quite a distinct difference to your conversation about the Batman on Film Hags. So were Ian and Katja, the two of the regulars and Cynos, shocked that you hadn't seen Mission Impossible?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. And then they were like, well, wait, any of them? And I was like, none of them I've seen, because now there's like 72 Mission Impossible mm-hmm. movies.
That's exactly right.
I had seen none of them. So, well, as I said, we will get a little bit more into that.
Before we do, I just wanted to mention real quick two other podcasts. We have friends of the show, Ron, Ismail, and Guti. They've started their own podcast called Real Latinos. Mm-hmm. And they've got, as yes. we record this, they've had two episodes out, and they are determined. Talking about Mission Impossibles, no, not Mission Impossibles, Mission Very Possible, to shed light on Latin American films and filmmakers. And they've done Coco as their first episode, and then the second one is Cronus, the Il Melo del
Toro. So speaking of shame, you really need to watch Coco at some point, and then you can listen to that first episode.
We had a Coco based incident this week at home.
Did you watch it finally?
No. And don't act like I don't want to watch it, because I've tried to watch it. I went to the cinema and actually paid money to watch it. And then I took my daughter, and I don't know how long ago it was, but she made us leave the cinema after about 10, 15 minutes because she couldn't take the dead people, the skeletons and everything. So we had to leave. But then she said to me the other day, oh, I watched Coco when at this summer club. She goes, Dad, I didn't like it. Somebody murders somebody in it. And then she started to describe this murder that happens in Coco, and she was traumatized by it. I don't know what it is about this film, but she just can't handle it. So I'm gonna have to wait another 6 years if I want to watch it with her.
Oh my gosh.
But I've got that Cronus on my view sphere, yeah. Boys from Real Latinos.
I still need to see Cronus, so that's my shame for that. But I think you should honestly watch Coco by yourself, because you will be crying so hard that you'll be thankful you are watching it by yourself.
And then I'd skip right over and listen to Real Latinos.
Yeah, and make you feel better.
And the other podcast I wanted to mention was a tape deck podcast called Lost Light. And they started out as a Transformers comic podcast, but they have pivoted so hard for their second season, and they did the Fast and the Furious films, and then they've just done a huge pivot again, and their season 3 is going to be Kendrick Lamar discography. I don't know any podcast who just transitions to such incredible angles from one to the next, but Jim and Caleb, they're great on that podcast. So if you like Kendrick Lamar, you might want to give that a little listen.
Let me just say, like, I'm just, like, an average Kendrick Lamar fan. Like, I like a lot of his music, but I got to see him live once, and, man, it was a party, and it was a really good time. And even though, like, I didn't know, like, half of the songs, I was like, this is, like, one of the best things I've ever been to. It was a crazy, crazy end of a festival, I will say that. So, good times. If you get to see Kendrick Lamar live, go do it.
I've got no concept of Kendrick Lamar. None.
Oh wow. Yeah.
So maybe this is the time that I start my journey.
You definitely know at least one song, because he did the entire album for Black Panther.
I mean,
now he's not on every song, but he organized that whole album, and he did all the stars and one song with The Weeknd on there. Mm-hmm. I forget what it's, Pray For Me, I think is what it's called. Mm-hmm. So you know at least two songs.
I know two songs. Let's just leave it at that. I know two songs. But what about you? You all right?
Yeah, I want to talk about, if anyone wants an update on the house. I bought a bird feeder a couple weeks ago, because one of my favorite things to do is watch bird videos with Mochi on TV. So I thought it would be fun to actually watch real birds with her. So they started to finally come to the bird feeder, and it's been a very exciting week. And hearing cats chitter is like one of the best things ever. Do you know what that is? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know specifically, but if it's to do with birds and Mochi watching birds, is it just like a prelude to murder? Is he sort of like working up to murder?
No, she basically just sits there and she goes, like makes this little noise, and that's what chittering is. I'll try to take a video the next time she does it, but it's like she just lays there and goes, like makes this little soft noise, but it's the cutest thing, and her old cheeks like move, and it's really cute that they just get so excited when they see something. Now she would do that a little bit when we'd watch the videos, but seeing them in person, she gets really, really excited, and she's like my little kid. Yeah, basically.
I just think it's wonderful that you're sharing in the interests of your cat, just so that she knows that you respect her.
I like bird watching. I think bird watching is pretty relaxing. It's been a busy time, a busy summer, so I like to just sit on the floor and watch birds with her. It's fun.
Are you an ornithologist, would you say?
No. I don't even know half the things coming to the bird feeder. I'm just like, ah, that's a cardinal. Mm-hmm.
Couple of blue tits. Do you get blue tits in America?
What?
They're birds, Marcy. Get your mind out of the gutter.
This is getting the E slapped on it real hard. I have no idea what that is. What is that, a real bird?
Yes, it's a real bird. And also, as I have been vindicated through personal conversations with other Americans, Absolutely Fabulous did make it over to the United States. Look, I'll give a description of Marcy's absolute just sort of disdain for that comment. I just like shrugged it off, like as if I care about that. It just looks so disgusted that I even brought it to her face then.
Like, I had never heard of it. Maybe like certain age brackets have heard of it, but
well, that's probably it, isn't it?
I have never heard of it, and that's okay. You know, that's fine.
It's fine. It's all fine. It's all good. Well, is it out else? Anything else been going on?
All kinds of stuff, but the bird feeder's been relaxing and nice, so I thought I'd focus on a positive this week. I
love a good bird feeder. My daughter made a bird bath for the birds one time, but it was like a, you know, like a 2-liter soft drink bottle, and she just chopped it in half and put some string in it and filled it with water. I've never seen a single bird take a bath in it. I'm upset for her. but she's out there. She's trying to earn a living with these bird baths. Keep going, Bets.
Oh, I believe in you, Betsy. That's so cute. Well, what about you? Anything you want to talk about? Anything new? Anything exciting?
I don't know. Probably not. You know, I'm just struggling through each day as it comes, trying to work out if I had too much coffee. Have I had too much coffee this day? Have I had too much alcohol the other day? We had went to a 40th birthday party yesterday, and it was in the afternoon because it was like for the kids, for the families. Mm. And we were there for about 5 hours, and I had about 3 alcoholic drinks. We got back and I was asleep on the couch. That is what my life is now. Unable to maintain alertness with any form of depressing chemicals in my body or just life in general.
I mean, are you sure it wasn't the show you were watching? We don't have to say what the show was, because I pretty much almost fell asleep also watching that show, and I had no alcohol in my system, so.
Yeah, I think we both had similar experiences to watching pilot episodes of a brand new Amazon-based TV show. That's all.
But we don't have to say what it is, and we don't have to make anyone mad, because I know a lot of people that really like it. But I'm still going to give it a shot. I might even try to watch the first episode again, but I was very shocked.
I might just decide to hop back on episode 3 and just say those first 2 episodes are dead to me now.
Oh, did you watch both?
Yeah, well, I say we watched them. I didn't watch them. Kate did.
Oh, well.
Well, I mean, that conversation we just had then, it was basically in some kind of spy code, because nobody's going to be able to decipher what TV show we're talking about. We've done a real good job of hiding that information, so nobody can get offended.
All right. Well, I guess we should move past these trying times of new shows.
What, do you want to talk about the film?
I think we should.
Yeah. So we're doing.
I think people are probably tired of
this. Yeah, I think so.
If they're still listening after we insulted the show.
Well, we're doing Mission Impossible from 1996. Mm-hmm. Now's the part of the show when I guess traditionally I would do a synopsis, but Marcy, I haven't done a synopsis. You're welcome, but could I interest you in a movie? Maybe you would consider the cinema of Azerbaijan.
Sure, why not? Let's give it a go.
Good evening, Miss Dale. We're asking you to infiltrate a podcast by means of discussing the spy thriller Mission Impossible. The story centers around an impossible mission force agent, Ethan Hunt, played by Tom Cruise. You may recall his previous aliases, Forest Boy Jack in Legend, and Ethan Hunt in Mission Impossible 2, 3, 4, and 6. Two main plot points coalesce here and here. As you can see, the first centers around a knock list containing the names and alter egos of all agents in the field. Secondly, a betrayal, as Hunt is framed for the theft and seeks to clear his name. Along the way, you'll encounter problematic marriages, latex face mask fetishes, and Emilio Estevez getting shafted. I've taken the liberty of assigning your usual bag carrier, Dirk, to join you. But as always, should you run out of things to say, we will disavow all knowledge and remove our 5-star rating from Spotify. Good luck. This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Oh my.
So, I didn't watch the movie, but hopefully you enjoyed the cinema of Uzbekistan. So, Mission Impossible, 1996.
Yeah.
So, Marcy, I've already alluded to it, but when you try and have a conversation with you, and you try and figure out what films you haven't seen that you might be able to share and doing a podcast, I mean the options are limited because you've seen a bajillion films. Okay. But you haven't seen this, and you also haven't seen any of the Bourne films.
Yeah.
And you also told me the other day you've only seen 2 James Bond films, and you went, you know, the usual one. I didn't know what that meant. What did that mean? Which 2 have you seen?
Okay, so the 2 I've seen Casino Royale, the first Daniel Craig, which is really good. And then my first James Bond I've ever seen, and I actually really like, is Living Daylights with Timothy Dalton.
Cracking. That's a good one. And I was looking on your letterbox list, trying to see if you've seen many other spy-based films. Like Atomic Blonde, have you seen that? That's a modern one.
No, I haven't seen that.
So, what is it? Why don't you like spy movies, Marcy Dale?
It's not spy movies at all. This, I was definitely way too young to go see this in a theater. And I had no interest ever in seeing any Mission Impossible movie. I don't even think I knew how many there were until these last couple started coming out. Sorry, Slim, cover your ears. I just am not a Tom Cruise fan. Other than when he's acting completely outrageous and I think just being himself. So, like, Tropic Thunder is a great Tom Cruise performance. Collateral is a great Tom Cruise performance. I did really like him in Top Gun Maverick because he's very reserved and not over the top, which surprised me. But I had just seen Top Gun for the first time this year, too. So there's just something about Tom Cruise where he kind of creeps me out. And he definitely did creep me out in this movie a little bit, too. We'll get a little more into that. But I think it was after, God, I can't remember the titles of the newer ones. But when the 4th one came out, there was all this buzz around it. I think I was still in college. And then I think when the newest one came out, the 6th one, everybody was like, oh, yes, these movies are so good. And I was like, well, maybe I should start watching them. And then I was like, but knowing me, I have to go in order. And what's funny is, actually, you really don't have to go in order. They all kind of are like James Bond, where they are just... Well, there's some connection between... I haven't seen the new... Okay, I got up to 3, okay? And 1, 2, and 3, other than Tom Cruise and Ving Rhames, there's really nothing that connects them. Mm-hmm. And we tried to watch the 4th one the other night, but I fell asleep, not because it was bad, but because I was just very tired. And so, I don't know, but I'm glad I'm going in order now because I am having a lot of fun. Yeah, we'll get a little bit more into that too. I don't want to like spoil everything just yet, but I like it. And I actually like the Tom Cruise performance, even though he's a little unhinged, but that's just who that guy is, I think. I think I just am learning to come to accept it. It's okay.
Like, I will say that certainly Fallout has callbacks to previous films. You can't go and see Fallout Well, you won't get as much out of Fallout if you haven't got some of the previous films under your belt, I would say, for sure. But yeah, when you told me, when you said, I watched it, and I watched number two as well, oh my goodness, I thought, here we go, she's liking it.
Yeah, we watched the first one, it ended, and I said immediately, let's watch the second one. Second one I had struggles with, like, there's some really good things about it, but it definitely is a little messy, and it's the most, I would say, un-Mission Impossible out of all of them that I've seen so far. And then we watched the third one the other night. Third one is very, very good, but I think my argument is you need to have a really, for these franchise movies, and this goes for, like, all things, like Marvel, all the other stuff. I'm sorry, I can't think of other franchises right now. But you need to have a really good villain. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is the villain in the third one. And, I mean, we all know he was, like, one of the best actors to ever live. And he really disturbed me. Like, you know, like, that guy who's in Mr., like, the Big Lebowski, that's just like, oh, gee willikers. Like, you know, I can't believe that's the guy that's, like, so terrifying in Mission Impossible 3. But then also, like, there's a really good villain in this one. But the second one, I don't even know the actor's name who plays, like, the main villain.
Duggery Scott. Kind of, like, he was almost your Wolverine. So he got cast as Wolverine. God, but
please return to sender.
But had to opted instead to go and film some reshoots for Mission Impossible 2 rather than take up the role
of hallelujah. Logan.
So there we go. I won't go into Mission Impossible 2 too much, other than to say I have some unironic love for Mission Impossible 2. But so,
I mean, I can understand that.
Yeah, but I think, but so it's not a spy thing, because it just seemed to me like you'd missed out a lot on, like, the Bourne films as well. And, like,
okay, so this ties into James Bond too. I tried to watch the first Bourne years ago, and then I fell asleep, and then I just never thought to pick them back up. But when Ultimatum came out, it was my senior year of high school, and everybody was so jacked up about it. And I was like, I need to go. But then I was like, but I don't know where to find the other two, because things aren't the way that they are today, where you can just find whatever, and it's very easy. And then now there's just a couple other ones, though, so it's like, I'll get to that when I get to that. And then James Bond, I really wanted to watch all the Craig movies, but the second one after Casino Royale, fell asleep. And then I tried to watch Skyfall, which was, like, the big deal, like, and I fell asleep during Skyfall.
Let me recommend you one. GoldenEye.
Well, yeah, I need to watch the originals. Well, no, and I'm sad. Like, I've never seen any. Oh, wait. Oh, that's Pierce Brosnan. Yeah. I'm sorry. I was thinking Sean Connery.
Nope.
I heard Golden and I stopped and I didn't listen to the rest.
Typical Marcy. No, GoldenEye, because it's modern in its sensibilities as well, I guess. In a way. It's not quite as modern as, say, Casino Royale, perhaps.
Casino Royale is just really good. Mm-hmm. Really well done. But who is Michelle Yeoh in GoldenEye?
No,
is that
no.
Who?
She's in. Oh, I think she's in one, like, of
them, though.
Do you know what? She's in Tomorrow Never Dies or The World Is Not Enough. Okay. I can't remember. Those two blend together a little bit for me, but she's in one of them. Well, getting back to Mission Impossible 1. So basically what you're telling me is you've never seen this movie because Tom Cruise is the reason. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you know what? Yeah. I can get it. Fair reason. He's not my favorite actor either. I can take him or leave him. Him being in a film neither sells me nor puts me off a movie. Well, it might put me off a movie, to be honest, sometimes more than it would sell him, than it would sell a movie. So I'm not exactly in a huge Tom Cruise zone, but the sort of the buzz around this film, 1996, so I saw it in the cinema, and I obviously knew the TV show from the 60s, weren't born in the 60s, but it's one of those shows that was replayed a lot on television, and you just knew all the kind of, you knew the theme, you knew the idea behind it. And I think it was a time when a lot of old shows were being remade into movies, and some of them were more successful than others. So I think, like, of The Fugitive has been a very successful one with Harrison Ford, The Brady Bunch, which went in a kind of a really odd direction, was mildly successful. And then following on from this, you know, things like Charlie's Angels, there was like a whole spate of Starsky and Hutch of, like, sort of TV shows from like the 60s, 70s that were being remade into movies in like the 90s, early noughties. And for me, this is the one that really just kind of succeeded in both capturing a feel of something that you were nostalgic for and yet giving you something with a contemporary sort of head on it. And there are many moments in this film when I'm just kind of either punch in the air or just really into it. But tell me, how did you find it when you were watching it?
Like, how did I find it?
Well,
watch
yeah,
it,
or, yeah. Like, what were your thoughts? What were your first thoughts? I guess maybe.
Oh, I thought you meant like, so I turned on my Xbox and then I went to Netflix, and that's what I thought you meant by find it. Like, how did I find it? So I was going to give you that. I want to start off with that this is a crazy cast. So I think obviously I knew Tom Cruise was in it. I knew John Voight was in it. And I think it's pretty obvious just because of who John Voight is that he's going to be the bad guy but that's fine. I don't think that's like much of a surprise, and I don't think it's ever supposed to be. And then I didn't realize Ving Rhames was in this series from the beginning. I thought he just showed up in the newer ones because I just remember seeing him on posters for the newer ones. So I was really happy to see a lot of people I really love in this movie. Like, I love Kristen Scott Thomas so much. I am so sad what happens to her because I thought that would have been more interesting seeing her stick around the whole time instead of the Claire character, because I just love Kristen Scott Thomas so much, and she's pretty famous at the time. I think this was like around the time she got her Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, that first team is famous, isn't it? And I think it's over you there, but the first team of Tom Cruise, Emilio Estevez, Kristen Scott Thomas, and I must admit I can't remember the name of the person who plays Hannah. They're there. That is a good set of actors already there, mm-hmm. You know. And Kill Your Darlings, don't last more than 10 yeah. minutes.
That's what shot. So, like, okay, so this is one of those movies where, yeah, I've never seen it, but I could tell you off the bat, John Voight's the villain. And I could tell, and I know that iconic scene where he's, like, dangling and not trying to hit the floor. So you think, like, okay, there's not going to be any surprises in this movie. So when they all started dying, like, one by one, I was like, what the? And especially Emilio, because he dies the most horrific way. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know if you knew this, so Emilio Estevez actually was Tom Cruise's best man at his first wedding. Did you know that?
I did not know that, Marcy.
Yeah, so I guess I don't know if they're still friends, but I guess, like, at that time they were really close and stuff. And I thought that was, like, maybe he just did the movie as, like, a favor. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, it'll look like I'm a big... Because, I mean, Emilio was still a pretty big deal in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's,
like I said, Kristen Scott Thomas is getting her, like, Oscar around mm-hmm. this time. You know what I mean? So these are pretty big people to just, what, first 20 minutes they're gone? I don't know, something quick like yeah. that? So it's something
it
like
that. It is. And I think to your point that, oh, it's John Voight, people know he's the bad guy. But he was playing the hero from the TV show.
So
this is what I mean. So he is playing Jim Phelps, who is like the hero from the TV show from the 60s. So it was a big kind of a twist, and not always that well received from certain. For, mm-hmm. I think certainly from the original actors who were in the Mission Impossible TV show, that they did that to the hero, and that all of the sort of the IMF team died and were murdered in the first sort of 10-15 minutes. You know. That was quite a break actually from what happens on the show, but I love it as a choice. What a choice! You're just like, mm-hmm. okay, this isn't the TV show. You know, it does have some of the feel and some of the fun of that. But whatever you were expecting, well, we have just broken all of the rules now, so you have no idea what's going to happen.
I like that though. Like I said, because I thought like there wasn't going to be. I wasn't saying like I wasn't going to like the movie, but I was like, well, there's not going to be anything yeah. that shocks me or surprises me, and then that, like, and I watched it with Dan and he had seen it before, but he didn't even remember how quickly that all happened. I was like, what is going on? Are they all gonna die? And he's like, I was like, come on, like, I need to know what's going on. And then even like, what, so John Voight gets shot and he falls into the river, and I was like, but I'm like, I know he's coming back, but even that was kind of like, wow, that's, Dan was saying, like, if you watch it, like, watching him shoot himself kind of now, it kind of, like, looks like, yeah, it is him shooting himself and stuff, but it was really shocking, And I mean, even in a short amount of time, just even with their first little quick mission you get in the beginning, and then that scene where they're all in the room together, there is a camaraderie. They all feel like they're friends. They all feel like they trust each other. And you kind of get to like all of them in a short amount of time. So it was, I think they did a really nice job with that, because, yeah, if people die and you don't have any attachments to them, you're like, all right, whatever. But when you're watching, like, especially like Emilio, like I said, going up that elevator, and you're just like, oh my God, like, they're going to stop it, right? They're going to stop the elevator. And then you kind of see it really quick and you're like, oh, holy crap. And then even like, so what happens to Kristen Scott Thomas? I thought she was going to get away, or like he was going to, by the time he gets to her, I thought like he'd be able to rescue her, save her. And nope. Like it just, it was so, I don't know, crazy. And I don't know. I just wish though, like if we could have switched Claire, I understand why we can't switch Claire and who Kristen Scott Thomas plays. But I would have, I think I would have had way more fun with the Kristen Scott Thomas character, like being in the Claire role. And then especially at the end, I think it would have been more of a twist if she was ended up having working with John Voight the whole time. But I get why they keep Claire in the movie. And Claire wasn't, I don't really, I'm not familiar with her, but I thought she was pretty good. The only thing that like disturbed me to no end was that she was married to John Voight. And I was like, on what planet? On what planet does that happen?
Well,
absolutely.
I think I want to discuss their marriage in a little bit more detail. But you were talking about sort of the cast and generally, and what it is, it's just like barn burning thing. So this is like what I love as well is that they did sort of against type casting with Ving Rhames as like a computer hacker. You know, I mean, and he just Pulp Fiction was like just what it was a couple of years before that,
2 years,
and
before
even
this,
like Jean Reno in like. He plays a different character here than sort of in Leon.
Leon,
yeah. You know, it's not the same sort of, it's not the same type of killer or whatever. So you've got them, but also Vanessa Redgrave as Max.
Oh, I love her. I actually wanted to bring her up a little bit, but I love that whole subplot with her. I love Vanessa Redgrave so much too. And I just thought she was so much fun. Anytime she showed up, she just was so cheeky. Yep. And I just loved her so much in this movie.
She was just having the time of her life flirting with Tom Cruise.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I know. Yeah, she really was. But she just, like, was... I love the expression, like, chewing on the scenery.
That's it.
I don't... Yeah. Good for her. Like, I'm glad. Like, she got a paycheck and she had a good time. I'm really happy for her.
I mean, she's won an Oscar. I don't think there's much to prove there. If she wants to just have a good time, earn a bit of money, having a chat with Tom Cruise, pretending like she's an arms dealer, let her go for it.
I was kind of sad, though, when I started watching the other couple that she does not show up ever again. And that was the one thing, just watching these sequels, where I was kind of hoping some people from maybe the first one. But you know what? I'm really happy. Like, can we go back to Ving Rhames?
Yes.
I actually think he's my favorite part of these that I've seen so far. I think he's genuinely funny, but he brings it effortlessly into the movie. And then he really has good chemistry with Tom Cruise, which I can't imagine is easy to do, just because, like we were saying with Tom Cruise.
I feel right now, Marcy, we're on the same wavelength, because I wrote down, number one, the cast, exclamation mark. Yeah, that's what I wrote down. Okay, what else have you got for me?
It's just mostly about the cast. Honestly, all my points are just different things the cast are doing. Like,
that's what happens in a film.
But, yeah, I mean... But they're just all really, you know what, everybody's really good in this movie. There isn't a single bad person. Even, like, Reno, we were talking about a little bit, like, there's something, I was a little bit confused. Maybe you can explain this a little bit. So, Ving Rhames and Reno are both on a list where, what, they're not allowed to work for that company anymore?
Yeah.
Is that what, okay. But he recruits them, and they've got nothing to lose, essentially, but... Where, like, Ving Rhames, right off the bat, I was like, well, he seems trustworthy. But there was something about Reno that I was like, I don't know. He looks shady. And then he ended up being very shady. So, like, but it's really funny, like, the part where he's holding him up. And he's really struggling. And I was like, wow, what a pathetic. But, like, it fits the character. It fits the character so well for, what like, what a weasel he is in the movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so we've got the knock list. As was alluded, okay, what is it? Something like non-official cover list. I think that's what it stands for. So it's got all of the list of the agents, the IMF agents. And if somebody gets hold of that, then they're kaput. Okay. But Tom Cruise's character is framed for the theft of that and the murder of his team that we've talked about with Emilio Estevez. So he has to go on the run and he has to come up with a new team, and he works with Claire, who somehow survives miraculously the murders at the beginning. Claire is in the original team. And so they use the disavowed list, yes, but Claire picks Jean Reno. So she's the one who picks him. So that's where, that's how he gets into it. She says, oh, I vouched for him or I picked him. So that's how he gets in, isn't it? And whereas either they just pick Ving Rhames because I think he's nearby and he's good with computers or something like that. So that's how they get there. But what about, this is my last thing I'm going to say in the cast. What about the guy playing Kittredge? I thought he was the undersung star of the show.
Trying to wait, which one's Kittredge?
Which one's Kittredge?
Is that the boss?
Yes.
No, the boss. I don't even know who that actor is.
Henry Czerny or something like that. I thought he was wonderful as this kind of playing the bad guy who is the good guy at the same time. And the way he enunciated and delivered certain lines, because I don't know what some of your favourite scenes are, but for me, probably the favourite scene is his conversation with Ethan after the failed mission, and they're in that restaurant, and Ethan suddenly starts to work the room, and he sees that there are other IMF agents there, and he realises that it's been a kind of a sting to try and find a suspected mole, and he's putting it all together, and Kittredge just being very passive-aggressive the whole time, about how, you know, we've lost a lot of agents today. And you mean I've lost a lot of agents? Well, don't be too hard on yourself. But I'm the only one left. He goes, well, I guess there is that. Or something like, he's very passive aggressive all the way through, just nudging him along. I think it's a great performance. I think he's really good.
I thought he was kind of funny, but maybe unintentionally. Like, one of the hardest parts I laughed at was, I don't even know. It's after they do the stunt where they actually get the real information and the whole, like, almost hitting the floor scene. But there's one guy that is allowed to go into this room with all this top secret information. And that guy is in a load of trouble because they know that information got stolen. And he is in the back. And then it's Kittredge and this other guy. He's like, just you and I know about this, nobody else. And we're shipping that guy off to Alaska. And that just, like, and then they, like, then you can finally see the guy in the background. And, like, and he's not, like, blurred out anymore. And that really made me laugh pretty hard. Because, yeah, like you said, like, he's a good guy. But he's also a weasel. Like,
absolute,
you know,
weasel.
Very shady. Like what he does to Tom Cruise's mom in this movie to try to squeeze him out and stuff like that. It's like, oh, that's real low.
Sure,
man. That's real
but you
low.
Know, he's but... trying to save the lives of every single field agent, Marcy. So if he puts a little pressure on someone's mum who he thinks is a traitor, you know, fair dues to him.
I also did like his scene, I'm sorry, with Vanessa Redgrave at the end too, but that was just showing how much fun she's having too. Like, she's like, I'm sure I have something you want that we don't, you know, we don't need to do this, you know. She really was a delight in this movie. I was so happy to see her. And I, like, you see all their names before the movie starts, and when it said, and Vanessa Redgrave, I said, get the hell out of here. Like, what is she gonna do in this movie? So her whole role was really unexpected, and it just was so much fun. Like I said, just see her having a good time and everything.
Do you have any particular favorite scenes?
I really did like that security guy. I thought he just was so incompetent. Like, wow, they really gave that guy this job? I can't believe, like, you know, when she's sitting next, Claire's next to him and putting the stuff in his drink and like literally taps him. Like, there's no way he didn't feel that with, you know, like the tracker on him and everything. But he was kind of like comic relief in a way. But watching them, like, I know, like, that's the iconic scene where they're trying to get the information. It is really suspenseful. It's really good. But also you get these moments of laughter where this guy keeps running to the bathroom to go puke his guts out. And he's really selling it for whatever little bit he's in the movie for. So I really did enjoy it. Like, even though I think what's impressive is, even though you know that scene's coming, you've seen that scene, whether you've seen this movie or not, but it still was really impressive. And it still really blows you away. And you're like, that's why they've made so many of these. This is what really is, like, this is about, like, this, the physicality of it, but, like, just, like, the iconicness of it. And it's like, I didn't want to be cliche and say that scene, but that's a really good, fun scene.
Yeah, there's not. That's not a cliche to say that scene, because it's, I think it's true. I mean, there's a reason that kind of wire work gets reproduced in quite a lot of the Mission Impossible. It's like a trademark almost, isn't it? That they do that mm-hmm. type of thing. I mean, speaking up for that security guy, I think it's very easy to believe he was distracted by Claire wearing those spectacles, sat next to him at that dining table. Very easy to think he was distracted and not really focused. What I like about the set piece that we're talking about, though, is how this is a summer action blockbuster, kind of. It is. But that whole scene, which is their big set piece, is like stone cold silence. And like the mm-hmm. sort of the, maybe bravery is too strong a word, but the gumption to just go, this is the big set piece, but we're not having any sort of danger music, incident music, and it's going to be as quiet as we can possibly get it. And just to try and encourage mm-hmm. you to kind of hold your breath along with them, I think it's really good. And I think one of the ways this film succeeds for me, again, is how it's about spies, right? And spies aren't always about kind of pulling out a gun and shooting people. It's about getting into places and not being seen and getting out. It's about mm-hmm. not being recognized, because if you get recognized as a spy, you're done. That's it. And so it's a lot of this film is about that. It's about being stealthy. It's about getting in and out and not getting seen. And the way that that is sort of enhanced a little bit with some of the claustrophobic nature of some of the camera choices. Do you know, like, that conversation I was talking about with Kittredge and Ethan Hunt in the restaurant, even how they get really zany close-ups of their faces at odd, jaunty angles. And then it just feels quite hemmed in. Everything just feels very close to me at times, and I think that just kind of keeps that feel that this is a real kind of, you're a spy, you're confined, this is, you know, it's not wide, it's not open.
So one really fun thing, so as I said, I've only seen the first three so far, but there have been really famous directors that do these first three, and I will say, so J.J. Abrams, well, no, he does three. I'm so sorry. I'm thinking of Brad Bird does number four. That's who I'm thinking of. But for these first three, what is so cool about them is they all have the fingerprint of the person who directed them. And they are all very similar in ways, but they are all very their own thing. So the first one is Brian De Palma. Those shots you're talking about, that is very Brian De Palma. Second one is John Woo. And it is such a John Woo movie. Like, that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. Like, no, that doesn't make it the bad thing of that movie. Yeah, yeah. But that's why that movie is the way that it is. And then J.J. Abrams does the third one. And it's like watching an episode of Alias, which is what he did and how he basically got started. And it's like, I love that, like, they gave enough freedom to these people to be like, make it your movie, but we do have like a blueprint at least that you have to follow, but you still, like, they all made it their own movie. Yeah, and that's why I feel like this first one, after watching all the other ones that I've seen, yeah, this one felt like the most like the spy movie, because now it's a lot of shootouts, there's a lot of explosions, there's a lot of like, who cares if we, like, you know, he's not doing disguises as often, every so often. But this is the one where it, like, really felt like a, and I guess I was expecting, from what I've seen from trailers of these newer movies, I was expecting more of, like, like, nonstop action. Yeah. So that was a nice surprise, too, where it's like, no, this is really, like, cat and mouse, and this is, like, thinking and being smart and who's the smartest person in the room type of movie. And I really liked that a lot. I thought that was really
cool. Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I think it evolves into something a little bit more action-based, doesn't it? As time goes on. I mean, and, you know, God bless John Woo, but, you know, that has a totally different sensibility to it as well. Yeah, this does feel like a spy movie, which I think is a very certain thing, and not necessarily a summer blockbuster, a spy movie, because it's all nudges and winks rather than big dramatic motions. But I think we get enough, and part of it for me comes in the delivery of some of the times that they tie the action in with, like, say, the theme music kicking in, like, you know, the final big sequence with the train going in the tunnel, and then Ethan's hanging on for his dear life on the train, and he jumps and it lands on the helicopter, and the theme music kicks in, and that's when you're standing up out of your seat going, go on, Ethan, lad, go on.
So actually, that was the scene I had the most trouble with, because I don't know if it's just because the helicopter looks so fake, but it just threw me through a loop at first, because the whole movie is not like that at all. And then you get this crazy train fight sequence, and it wasn't bad. It just threw me off so much because it wasn't like the rest of the movie. But as soon as that theme kicks in, like you said, it's like, oh yeah, okay, like I don't care anymore. Like, this is really pretty cool. But that was like my only real negative, where it was just like, oh man. And then the guy like conducting the train or whatever, he's like, oh, he's got a helicopter, we're in the tunnel. I was like, hasn't he seen the helicopter the whole time? Hasn't he been like worried about, like, why is he just now being like, there's a helicopter right behind us? But I really thought that was a cool fight, as much as it just felt like a 180 from what the rest of the movie
I think from what I can gather, they kind of put the film together set piece by set piece, and then they were writing the story and the plot as they went along, even almost sometimes when they were shooting it. So they had the wire scene, and they had the train scene. They really wanted train scene to be in it, and they really wanted it, you know, this fast train that goes from England to France underneath the tunnel. That tunnel is underneath the British Channel, you know, underneath the sea. Mm-hmm. So they really wanted that. And apparently Tom Cruise had to take them out for dinner to get the company to agree to have that sort of in the movie and all that sort of stuff. I don't know. What struck me when I saw it the first time was I was really impressed that this was a realistic depiction of what it would be like for someone to be climbing on top of this train, and like they were hanging on for dear life.
Oh yeah.
And like John Voight's character is there in all his old man gear with his knee pads on, his elbow pads, and his goggles to stop flies getting in his face and all that sort of stuff. And then Tom Cruise is just hanging on with his tie. I was really into that.
Like, no one was looking beautiful on top of that train. So like, no, I know what you mean. Like, yeah. I was actually really, sometimes John Voight is like hit or miss for me, but I actually really enjoyed him in this movie. But I love that he didn't think like Ethan would catch on. Like there's that really odd scene where Ethan is letting like Kittredge know that he's at least in London, but not his exact pinpoint, and then John Voight's just like right behind mm-hmm. him, and it's like, why would you ever reveal your, like, you know, he already has it figured out by that point, but it's like, you don't think like him seeing you would just be like the slightest like, oh, red flag.
So,
like,
so
oh
did
my
you
gosh,
feel like
alive.
You knew John Voight was the bad guy from the beginning? Yeah.
Just because I, like you said, I have seen so many movies that, like, when somebody that big is in the movie and then they die that quickly, and it's not like it was and John Voight, he was the second billed person on the whole thing, and you're like, oh, he's definitely mm-hmm. coming back. He's definitely the big main guy. And then, like, the whole plot of the movie is someone inside on that team had been sabotaging everybody. And I was like, it's going to be John Voight. Like, don't be shocked. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't. But I don't think that takes away anything from the movie. It's still really good. Yeah. And it's okay. Like, I don't think this is, like, it's not like a murder mystery. Well, I guess kind of in
no,
a way.
No, I know what you mean.
Some murders happen.
Yeah,
but,
I know what you mean. And I think we know it before it's actively revealed as well, don't we? We kind of, when he discovers mm-hmm. the Bible, that was from the hotel that John Voight character had been in. But I like that conversation again. A lot of good conversation in this film with John Voight's character and Tom Cruise's character, where John Voight is trying to explain away what's going on. And we can see that Tom Cruise is kind of, Ethan Hunt is trying to play along, and at the same time, he's not doing a great job of playing along. And he's kind of mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, that makes so much sense. And he's doing a very good job of acting like he's playing along and not quite believing it at the same time. I really like the sort of the dynamic there.
So can you explain, because I got a little bit confused too. So the motives behind everything was John Voight just was tired of doing this. So he thought, like, getting the list out there, it would just kind of end
everything. It was the Cold War's finished. Spies are no longer needed. Mm-hmm. I need some money.
Okay.
I need some money. I think that was basically what it came down to. But what about the problematic marriage between Mr. Phelps and Claire? I mean, oh my goodness. How did that even happen?
In the beginning, when John Voight's on the plane and it's going through who his team is, and they're like, and your wife Claire, I just thought I heard it wrong. And then I was like, all right, I don't know what I thought I heard, whatever. And then at the end, or not at the end, but when they're all together And then, like, Tom Cruise makes a joke, like, can we get a cappuccino machine, you know? And he's like, don't make fun of my wife's coffee. I was like, oh, my God, they're married. Yes. Oh, my God, they're married. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, whereas, like, okay, so I know, like, I love 40s, 50s, 60s movies where, yes, they were a lot older than, like, the female co-stars for the most part. But I get it. That was that time period. I feel like the 90s is too modern to, like, trying to get away with something.
Yeah.
We're like... It's just like, no, like, he's not, he doesn't even, he looks like he's 70 mm-hmm. years older than her. What are we doing here? Like, why would she ever?
No, well, I don't understand. I mean, even, so my memory of watching it for the very first time in 96 was like, they're not married. What are you talking about? No way are they married. Are you joking?
Yeah.
It's just, it's so ridiculous.
Oh my gosh. And then I literally thought I was going to throw up at the end whenever it's Jim, Claire, and Ethan in the back of the train, and he's implying that, like, Claire led him on, and he's like, yeah, and I knew she could do it because I'd tasted the goods, and I was like, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up. I don't want to think about it. Like, luckily, like, they don't have any type of romantic scene or chemistry at all in the movie. Just hearing him say that, I was like, oh, like, oh, my God. No, I don't want to think about that.
I think they dialed back a lot of the kind of the love triangle stuff. I think there was more in there, but they really just kind of took it out. Maybe because it's just like...
I didn't think anything happened between Claire and Ethan at all.
I think it did. I think we're supposed to believe it did, but equally, it's a strange decision if it did, because Ethan's just seen that Jim's alive, and then, you know, at that point. So it's muddy. It's very muddy, but... I think we established that Claire is Ethan's weakness, because he makes excuses for her in his own mind as to, oh, she couldn't have blown up Hannah or whatever.
To me, I took that more as just like, this is my last member of my team.
Okay.
I've trusted her this far. Not being able to trust her. Could you imagine how that would make you feel? Like, how paranoid that would make you feel? Like, how little interest you'd have in that. Well, even at the end, he's like, I don't know if I want to go back and do this, which I thought was a really good scene with him and Ving Rhames. But yeah, just, you know, like, yeah, it does change him, I think. Like, just, like, he did think he could trust Claire, and that betrayal, it's not, like, romantic. It's just, like, really, like, we've gone through all this stuff together, and you too. Like, you know, I can't believe it. And, like, you, like, our whole other team's dead, and you were going to betray everybody. Like, you know, it would be, like, really earth-shattering. So that's more the vibe I got from that.
I think there is a little bit of smoochy-smoochy, though. I'm just going to say that. I think there is. I like your description, but I also think it's a little bit of,
But I didn't think they had any chemistry either, so maybe that's why I'm just thinking that. I thought he had way more chemistry whenever he's pretending to, like, Chris...
Oh,
or
right, you like
Chris,
Kristen Scott Thomas.
Kristen. But, like, when they were pretending to, like, be up against that wall, I was like, well, there's something there. And so then when she died again, I was like, oh, my God, like... Wait, they weren't together? Like, but they're all very professional, which is cool. Like, they don't, like, well, other than John Voight and Claire.
But she was into Emilio Estevez. That was the thing.
Oh,
they
okay.
were into those two right. were into each other. I think that's what
I didn't get
yeah.
that at all.
They
either.
Talk about Emilio Estevez's lovely bottom at one point and different things.
I think you can admire a bottom and not be in love with
fine.
Somebody.
Okay, fine. But in the world of espionage, if you don't know, you're going to be alive from one day to the next. You take your bottoms as soon as you can, and you embrace them, true. And you bring them in, and you love them. So don't be dismissing it.
Oh my God. Are we writing a spy movie and that's going to be the whole plot?
We are now. Oh, anything God. Else, Marcy oh. Dale? Anything else?
There were a couple funny scenes that I really liked whenever, you know, Reno thought he had the disc, and Tom Cruise was like, oh, this disc. And he kept doing, like, the magic trick or whatever. And then it turns out he did actually have it, but threw it out in anger. He was like, oh, God, he really did have it. But also, the first time he's with Vanessa Redgrave, and he's like, hey, like, listen, what's on that disc is a tracking signal. They're going to come find you in 2 minutes. And he's just cool as a, like, cucumber, like, whatever, don't listen to me then. And then just watching them, like, trying to figure out if it's real or not. That was a really fun scene. I like that a lot.
I think
lot.
Every scene with Max is really any... great. Yeah.
Yeah, she's just... That's what I was like, oh, it would be really cool if she showed up again. But I think she would never do it now. Is there any like any other scenes or anything else you want to talk about?
There's a lot of quotable lines in this. I think mm-hmm. one that stuck with me, like I probably say it on a monthly basis, is "It's much worse than you think." When he's trying to explain how they're going to break into Langley, and Luther, relax. It's much worse than you think. I love mm-hmm. that. But lots of great lines. You've never seen me very upset. Red light, green light. I still love red light, green light for mm-hmm. a reason or other. But also, this is like 96. Putting the timestamp on it, this was dawn of the internet. You know, the internet was kind of just mm-hmm. kind of becoming commonplace, but lots of homes did not have the internet. And Tom Cruise's use of the internet to try and find out who Job 314 was brings a smile to mm-hmm. my face every single time when he's typing into some search engine. Oh, max.com. Oh, that didn't work. And just like the absolute mm-hmm. kind of rudimentary nature of his internet search is beautiful.
Yeah.
So beautiful. And then the other thing I really like is, I think it's Ethan's mum. Is her middle name Ethan? I must have listened to that bit 3 or 4 times, but I'm sure she's called Margaret Ethan Hunt. Somebody can correct me on that, but I listened to that 3 times. What a weird name.
Maybe that was like subconsciously done on the television for like a direct message to Ethan.
Maybe.
Margaret Ethan Hunt. Yeah, I don't know.
Just an idea. So, overall then, this was my mm-hmm. my pick for you to say, look, I can't believe you never watched this. And how do you mm-hmm. feel now you've watched it?
Oh, I really liked it. I watched it twice, actually. And I wasn't going to, but then I was like, you know what? I really had fun with this. And it was also leaving Netflix on the 31st of August. So I was like, let's try to watch this again. But I really am excited to watch the rest of them now. And then I might be able actually to see this next one coming out in the theater. Mm-hmm. So that'll be my first.
You inspired me because I can only really remember 1, 2, 6. And then somewhere in the middle, the 3, 4, and 5 mm-hmm. get lost a little bit and muddled with me. So I'm going to go back.
I really, really liked 3 a lot. And 3 reminded me a lot of the first one. Like, it's like 2 so drastically different. Again, not a bad thing. But then you get back to the roots a little bit with 3. And there's some surprises in 3 that I was like, oh, wow, okay. And what I like is he gets like a pretty cool different team each time. So the team in 3, Ving Rhames is back, but it's the first one that Simon mm-hmm. Pegg's in, and that he's not really part of the team, but he's like on the back end doing tech. He's kind of like mm-hmm. Q basically from James Bond. And then Maggie Q is mm-hmm. in it. And then John Reese Myers, who I really like a lot. So they're all in it, but they never like, you know, well, Simon Pegg comes back, Ving Rhames comes back, but those other two don't ever come back. And then when I started the 4th one, even though I fell asleep, like Paula Patton's in it and somebody else that I was like, oh wow, okay. So I like that it's like really cool people, not like the most famous people, but people you really enjoy. Like I know Henry Cavill's in the 6th one and he had that mustache because that mm-hmm. led to that whole Justice
and
League
an absolutely iconic scene of him loading his arms.
Oh, I have seen that. Oh my god, times.
Like, that makes me just swoon every single time he does that flipping. No,
I am a big fan of Henry Cavill. I'm really hoping he shows up. Oh, it was Jeremy Renner's in the 4th one, and he's in the 5th one because I think the plan was to originally give the franchise to Jeremy Renner, but then Tom Cruise was like, "Haha, gotcha again." And
he's lost so many franchises, that boy.
Well, he also Jason Bourne, which we were talking about earlier.
That's what I was alluding to. Part of what we do here on the Movie Mixtape is associate songs as best we can with the movies. Should we do that now? Mm-hmm. Do you want to do that now?
Yeah, I think my song actually works really well. But you can go first.
Oh, no, you go first, Marcy.
Well, you know how you were talking about like how when they're in the tunnel and then it's like pretty like it's like there's a lot going on, but then like it really like woo, it like really mm-hmm. kicks in when he jumps on the helicopter, then like the theme comes in. So I picked this song by a group I really like called Rat-a-Tat. They're just instrumental, but they have a song called No Strand, and it starts so slow, and then literally like right a little bit after the middle of it, there literally someone says woo, and then like the whole thing picks up, and it reminded me so much of just throughout this movie where sometimes it'll be pretty slow, not slow in a bad way, but just like, yeah, you know, there's not, it's not action 24/7. And then like all of a sudden just something happens and you're like, whoa, holy crap. So that's what
I love
song,
that.
Just the vibe mm-hmm. of the movie is the vibe of the song.
I love that. So. I think it is a slow film at times. And I think that's some of the critique I've seen applied to it when people have watched it maybe for the first time now and compared it to kind of what they expect of a Mission Impossible film. But I love the pacing of it. I absolutely love the pacing of this mm-hmm. film and the way it is like a spy rather than an action film. So I can't wait to listen to that. Marcy, Rat-a-tat. Is that right?
Rat-a-tat. Rat-a-tat, yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. my pick is... I picked this because the first time I ever heard this song, for some reason, it made me feel like a spy. And so when I listen to this song, it is just permanently entwined with the idea of me being a spy. And this would be perhaps the soundtrack of me doing a load of spying. And it is, I don't even know why it does that, but it's a guy called Eugene McGuinness. And the song is called Lion. And it is a brilliantly catchy song. And it just, for some reason, in my head, makes me think of Mission Impossible. And always has. So that is why I've chosen this one. I can't.
Okay. I'll let you know if I agree.
I can't be more concrete than that. It's a mildly abstract one this week, but it's a really good song. Mm-hmm. There we go.
I think like sometimes that's what you have to do with mm-hmm. the songs, but like they work. We always make them work one way or another. So,
well, if you fancy writing in and telling us that time when you went to Prague and did a little bit of undercover work for someone, write in to us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. You can follow our Instagram account at @the_moviemixtape, and you can see all the beautiful art that Mikey P does, and he's done another amazing bit mm-hmm. of art for this.
Yeah, it's really mm-hmm. cool. It's just really cool. It looks like I was telling him, it reminded me of like a comic book mm-hmm. cover. And I really enjoyed it very much. So thank you, Mikey.
As always, thank you, Mikey. And on Instagram, we do, put some little bits of alternative movie posters that we found that we like. And we asked some questions. And earlier today, I did ask a question. I said, we were recording this film. And I said, what? Well, we weren't recording the film. We were recording an episode about the film. When I said, what is your favorite spy movie? We had a few responses. Admittedly, it was just a few hours before we recorded. But Mikey P, God bless him, we're just talking about him. He said Spy. That's a recent one, right? That's a comedy.
Yeah, that's actually a really funny mm-hmm. movie. Like, I think that movie is so funny because Jason Statham is in it, but he is hilarious. Absolutely. Like, he is pining after Melissa McCarthy mm-hmm. in that movie. And you're like, what a choice. And it is very... He is very funny in it, and I think like just that alone makes that movie worth a watch. I don't know.
No, do you know what? I probably would never watch it, but if it hadn't been for the marvel of people recommending it and saying actually it's really good, so it is on my list. It is on my list to watch.
It is really funny.
I think it's one of them that I probably would have just absolutely passed by. Ismail, who is one of the hosts of the Real Latinos, Real spelled R-E-E-L. I should have mentioned that in the beginning. He says, does Inglourious Bastards count? Spying? Yes. I think it probably does.
Yeah, it's happening. I mean, they might not be the best at it. Buongiorno. I speak good Italian.
Fassbender's a spy, though, right?
And also the Melanie Laurent, who owns the theater, kind of in her own way. She's doing her own things. And then Diane Kruger, who's the German mm-hmm. actress. She's a mm-hmm. spy as well. So definitely. I love Inglourious Basterds. That's probably my favorite Tarantino movie.
Let me just have a think. Maybe my favorite one as well.
It's mm-hmm. so good.
Maybe.
It's really
maybe.
Good. Are we doing it next week?
Just no, I've seen it. Hannah, who was recently on the Rankings episode.
Oh, so Hannah was on Rankings recently, and she ranked Harry Potter movies, but they unfortunately also added the Fantastic Beast movies to that. I don't know if you've seen those,
no,
but they are dreadful.
I've not seen them.
Just save yourself some mm-hmm. time. Watch Spy instead of the Fantastic Beast movies.
Well, Hannah said a movie that's close to my heart. She said Spy Kids. Have you seen Spy Kids, Marcy?
So this is another franchise. I have never seen any of the Spy Kids movies.
I think it's just one of the most beautiful things in the world that Robert Rodriguez has just created a whole... whole wing in his catalogue for these kids movies that he just puts together, and they're so good. They are so good. I mean, they're a thing to behold, like Spy Kids and Shark Boy and Lava Girl. We Can Be Heroes, I think, was the recent one. That was a straight-to-Netflix movie. But they're so much fun. And they're Robert Rodriguez kids movies. Yeah. So there'd be what is not to love about that.
I was, like, the right age when they came out, but I just, something about them, I was like, I'm okay. And I still, I'm so sorry, everybody, but I still feel like I'm okay. Like, I don't need to watch those. But maybe when I have kids and they're older.
Oh, they don't lower yourself to our level, Martin. Don't lower yourself. And then we had, Megan, who we know through.
Was she paid to send this in?
Megan says True Lies. That is a good modern.
Oh, okay. I've never seen flipping it, but I really you
pretend
want
right earlier
it.
On you pretended it wasn't spy movies, but yet again, Spy Kids not seen, True Lies not seen, Marcy Dale.
I saw the first two movies that were listed.
Have a word with yourself in the mirror and admit that you don't like spy movies or you've got a thing about it. But anyway, True Lies is good. Yeah, True Lies is real good. I like that one.
Really hard to find. Is it? That's why I haven't watched it yet. It's very hard to find. I don't know if just James Cameron is like, not this one, not releasing it in Blu-ray ever, but it's also hard to find to rent.
Oh, really?
Too. So that's why I've never
seen it.
That's
another film with a really good cast. You know, Arnold's in it, but Jamie Lee Curtis is in it. I was going to say a really good cast, and the others have gone out of my head. Bill Paxton, is that right?
I'm pretty sure he's in it. That movie too.
Tom Arnold.
Well, when you first said, I was going to say, when you said Arnold at first, I was like, is he talking about Arnold Schwarzenegger or Tom Arnold? Because I knew Tom Arnold was in the movie too. So.
No, True Lies is a lot of fun. And then, Kablasto joins in and he gave a few answers. And I'm just going to pick the one that is actually seems a genuine answer that I know is close to your heart, Marcy.
Okay.
North by Northwest.
Oh, I just watched that for the first time.
Oh, really?
Recently. Actually, you know what is so funny? I was going to ask you what your favorite spy movie is, but I'll go first because my favorite spy movie actually is a Hitchcock movie with Cary Grant, but it's called Notorious, and it's with Ingrid Bergman, and it is, it's just so good, and it's right after 19... So it's 1946 when it comes out. It's right after World War II, and they are essentially hunting Nazis in South America, and it's a cool, crazy movie. But I think you would absolutely hate Cary Grant in it. But maybe one day we'll
well, you mentioned you have mentioned that more than once, and so it is on the mental list to watch at some point. Definitely,
it's a really good movie. But North by Northwest was really fun too. North by Northwest is like Mission Impossible, where it's like. You have seen that scene where Cary Grant is getting chased down by the airplane.
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
knows
I do know
that,
that
scene. And when you get to see it finally, you're like, it's still really cool. It's still really impressive. It still really blows your mind. So I would say, like, North by Northwest wouldn't be a bad, like, hand-in-hand double feature with Mission Impossible, I feel like. So well done, Kablasto. Look,
I mean, you gave a lot of other answers that I've ignored, and I've gone for the one that seems like a genuine answer with that. I think for me, I do think Mission Impossible, this one, is a very close choice for the best spy film. But I will go, for the sake of patriotism, I will go with GoldenEye as my favourite spy film. It's so good. Okay. Pierce Brosnan's first Bond, and he is very good. Sean Bean is in it. He is a beautiful man, and he's great in it, and there's lots of other great things, and it spawned maybe one of the greatest video games in the entire history of man. So what more can you say?
I definitely have played the video game several
times. If you want to talk legacy, GoldenEye's, you know, Mission Impossible, sure, six movies, and now, what, eight movies in total? Has it got a really killer video game?
No, it has not. Well, there's a reason for that. Do you know that Tom Cruise has, like, a contract where you cannot use his likeness in any way in any type of video game?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. And this is the first film they ever produced as well, Mission Impossible, which I also didn't know. This is his first ever, where he got his hands behind...
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
He's got his hands on the wheel. This is how I'm doing it. That's how Tom Cruise speaks.
He's pretty smart at picking which ones he produced, I will say. So he knows which horse, like, to back.
Yeah.
You know what? I will give him the benefit of the doubt. He is very intelligent. He's just got a little bit of a creepy smile, That kind of unnerves me a little bit. And then when he gets a little too excited, you kind of just want to be like, calm down. But, you know, I'm coming around.
I think, you know, he really did make some smart choices. I think Brian De Palma was a great choice to direct this film. Mm-hmm. Really do. Yeah. And we've talked about the cast and the set pieces. So well done, Tom. Well done. And there we go. That's the end of that, isn't it? That's the end of that episode. But if you do want to write in, themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com, and we will lovingly embrace that, much like Ethan and Luther enjoyed their pint whilst listening to the Cranberries at the end of the film.
Oh my God, what a choice for a song at the end of the movie. I couldn't believe that was happening. I meant to bring that up, but I didn't. I was sitting there like, what is...
Because they're in a pub, aren't they? They're in a pub.
Oh my God, what a choice. What a choice for a song. I mean, it's a great song. Great song, great movie, but maybe sometimes two positives...
I can't believe you just. Yeah, I can't believe you're besmirching it. Well, that wonderful moment. I'm gonna rewind that bit.
So sorry.
But it's your choice now, Marcy.
So I really struggled because there's so many things you have. You are the opposite of me, where you have seen nothing, and there. I literally was like shuffling between 4 to 5 movies on this, and I really went down to 2, and then actually Mikey helped me decide the final pick, and it actually was earlier today. I had floated my ideas to Mikey because Mikey does the art, and I want him to know as soon as he can so he can start working on it early. So one, I was very leaning heavily towards, he sent me the artwork for it today, and he said, don't let this persuade you one way or the other, but it was like kind of the more favorite I felt anyways, and the artwork's really good, so I've seen the artwork.
Oh
way
my
before
God,
you have.
I'm gonna puke.
So I'm gonna jump 10 years from 1996. We're gonna go to 2006, and we're gonna do Christopher Nolan's The Prestige.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. You're quite right, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. Oh, but I have my drill questions for next week because I really want to know why you haven't seen this movie. So just a couple spoilers. It's my favorite Christopher Nolan movie, and I just think it's one that a lot of... So it's not just for you, but I feel like it's a lot of people's, like, on their watch list that maybe they missed. Like, it's the Nolan movie most people haven't seen, and I feel like everyone needs to check it out.
Very excited to watch that, Marcy. Finally. Good pick.
I'm excited, too. Yeah. David Bowie's back, baby! I'm so excited. Yeah, he's... Oh, I won't tell you who he plays.
Well, I'll find out when I watch it.
It's a famous person.
Is it David Bowie? Does he play David Bowie?
Yeah. He just played in the 1800s.
Time travel. David Bowie, the time traveler. Well, there we go. Yeah. That's what next week's going to be then, isn't it? So I can't wait. But for now, Marcy, thank you for this. I had a great time talking about it with you.
Yeah, I'm so happy. And now I can watch the rest of them. And my Mission Impossible journey continues because I really did enjoy. I've enjoyed all of them so far. But one, I would say, is my favorite. 3 and then 2, and then I'm very excited to dive into these newer ones.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thanks.
And we'll see everybody else next week. Smell you later.
Bye.
So calling that, you sucker.
Mixtape is a podcast hosted by Dirk and Marcy, mixed and edited by me. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Find us on Instagram @the_moviemixtape and catch new episodes on Wednesdays. Thanks for listening. Bye!